Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Happy Thanksgiving, and welcome to Turkey Confidential. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is the Splendid Table's annual cooking call-in special from American Public Media. Turkey Confidential is supported by OldSaltMerchants.com. Be salty, be sweet, be spicy. All right, today's the day where we gather at tables and laugh, hopefully don't argue too much, we cook enormous amounts of food, or make this a day of service. But today, it's a day of thanks. And hey, I want to tell you what I'm thankful for right now. Halloween. What I mean by that is, I mean, look, I'm not going to lie, right? Like a whole lot of people, I've got a lot on my mind. And you know what? I have held on to Halloween for weeks. Because that afternoon, I got to go outside my door. And I saw all these little kids, just cute as anything in their costumes. And they were like, taking each other's hands and running up and down the street, just totally full of joy. And I'm thankful for that. For that spirit, for my neighbors, for the happiness and little pleasures, for that sight of just pure friendship. And I'm thankful because it reminded me that no matter how crazy things get, I can still look to the people I care about and find comfort in them. And that's what Thanksgiving is also about, right? So thank you for joining us today. And however you're gathering or celebrating, or maybe just taking a moment to call your family or your friends, I hope you're filling your cup with community. And I hope you're filling your plate with great food too, because we certainly are. We've got fantastic guests joining us to answer your cooking questions today, the cookingest day of the year. So a little later in the hour, we're going to be joined by the wonderful Nashville chef Manit Chauhan, star judge of Chopped on the Food Network. And we're going to start with our friend coming all the way from Mazatlan, Mexico, Rick Martinez. He's one of the internet's absolute favorite cooking teachers. He's the host of the YouTube shows Sweet Heat and Pueblo, and he's the author of the New York Times bestselling cookbook, Mi Cocina. Hey, Rick, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
I'm great, man. It's so good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So I know you just mentioned that it's super hot there. Yes. And I know you moved to Mexico a few years ago, but do you still celebrate Thanksgiving?
I do. I love Thanksgiving. It's so much a part of me growing up. It was my mother's favorite holiday. And it was just a very special occasion for all of us. You know, my mom cooked to show her love for the people that she cared about.
Yeah.
And so Thanksgiving was really almost this ultimate expression of love. And, you know, from my earliest memories of her making Thanksgiving dinner, like it was a big deal, but she also loved it. And I think she got that from her mother, because I remember my grandmother was sort of the same way. Like that was her deal. She did everything herself. And when she got really sick before she died, she kind of passed that torch literally to my mom and was like, I need you to make Thanksgiving this year. And then that was when my mom took over. Wow. It's something that's really important to me. And although now it's very different now living here than when I was in the US.
Yeah. What's it like now?
You know, my first Thanksgiving away from family and frankly the US was during lockdown. And, you know, I had a group of friends in Mazatlan that I had just made. I had been here for maybe 5 months. And they had invited me over. They were also Mexican-American and living in Mazatlan. And so we decided to do an outdoor Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to make the turkeys. And I told them, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do one that is like a little bit more traditional American roasted turkey. But sure. The other one, I am going to do something out of my book. One of my favorite recipes in the book is chicken al pastor. And I first had it in Guanajuato, and, you know, there's this rotisserie chicken stand, and all of the chickens were marinated in this achiote chili paste. The smell was insane because they were being roasted over an open fire. And I knew immediately that I wanted that recipe in the book. And then at that time, I'd recently gotten a grill with a rotisserie function on it. And I had made the pollo al pastor. And I remember once I had made it, I was like, oh my God, I'm never going back to roast chicken again. I'm going to always do rotisserie chicken. And then I thought, you know what? I want a rotisserie turkey. So I ended up doing both turkeys on the grill, on the rotisserie. One was, you know, just a nice dry brine with, you know, a traditional American flavors. And then the other was the turkey al pastor. And it was ridiculous. Like, everybody went absolutely insane for it. Nobody wanted to eat the other turkey. Much we were down to the carcass of the pavo al pastor. And yeah, it was a hit. And I was just like, I don't know if I can go back to, certainly I'm never going back to a traditional roasted turkey. I'm always going to do rotisserie. But there's something just really magical about having that turkey experience, but in a completely different context. And since then, I have created salsas made with cranberries and walnuts and pecans. And have included, you know, sort of all of the traditional flavors and ingredients that you would think of when you think of Thanksgiving, but in a very Mexican context.
Yeah. Oh, I love that idea. That sounds super cool. Well, hey, you know what? We do have callers already calling in. So let's go to one of them. And then I'm going to talk to you about walnut pecan cranberry salsa later. Let's go to Dania.
Yes. Aloha.
Aloha. Where are you calling
Aloha.
From?
Okay. Don't get jealous, but I live on Maui in Hawaii.
Oh, amazing.
Well, I mean, Rick is in Mazatlan, Mexico, so he's doing okay. I'm the only one sitting in midtown Manhattan.
He's in a sweater.
Yeah, in a sweater.
Yeah, it's beautiful and warm always.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to you, and how can we help you?
Thank you. So I'm an accomplished home cook, and there's one thing that's eluded me for my entire adult life, and it's making clear chicken or turkey stock. The flavor is great, but it always comes out like gray and dark brown, and you know, it just is so unattractive. And it seems like I've tried every trick in the book, except I know that you're going to help guide me.
Yes, I actually have just the answer for you because I have done that as well. So, okay, there's levels of clarity. So the way that I make my stock, because I make chicken and turkey, chicken stock year-round, turkey stock, obviously, right before Thanksgiving. I usually let mine cook overnight. If I'm going to be, you know, if I'm doing this during the day, or like I'll let it go all day. But the key to the clear stock is the absolute barest simmer.
Yeah.
Meaning you're only seeing like one or two bubbles every second or two.
Okay.
Like the more it bubbles, the more you agitate your ingredients. So like your bones, or if you have any vegetables or herbs in there, that agitation releases, you know, either the proteins or particles in the ingredients that will then make your broth cloudy.
Yeah.
So for me, what I normally do is I'll just set it, put my water, my bones, any herbs, in the large stock pot, turn it on absolute low on the smallest burner I have, and then go to bed. And then I wake up, the whole house smells like chicken stock, and it's perfectly clear. Now, if you want it like even more clear, and some people do this, I think it's probably more common with either pork or beef stocks, but if you're using larger bones, so let's say you were using drumsticks for your turkey stock, some people bring the bones or the meat or whatever it is you're using to a boil and then drain that liquid. Mm-hmm. And you'll see a lot of the gray particles that float up to the top. Like, so you bring it to a rapid boil for like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You'll see all the gray stuff, and then they drain the water, and then they fill it up with clear water, and then, you know, put it onto the barest simmer.
Yeah.
So that is going to that will absolutely get rid of all the yucky business, and you'll get absolutely clear stock. I don't do that just because I don't really like to waste water, and also it's like an extra step. I'd rather just like throw everything in the pot, put it on low, and go to bed.
Okay. Well, I had a friend of mine, chef friend, that suggested that I just use turkey wings, and I tried that, and it still came out gray. I have not tried your method, so I'm taking great notes, and I will try it with my turkey carcass.
Just literally, like, it's almost like you're making tea, right? You're just wanting to steep the bones and the vegetables in the liquid. You know, this is also the method that we used to use. I went to the French Culinary Institute for culinary school, and we would make our broths overnight. So right at the end of class, everybody would chop vegetables. If we were making a brown stock, we would roast the veg. If we were making a white stock, we would just throw everything in the pot. And, you know, these pots are like 50-gallon kettles, and we would fill them up with water, turn it on, and then leave, and then come back the next morning.
Just go home.
And we would basically like cool them down and put them up. So that's kind of where I got the overnight method.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Danny, let me ask you, when you have this beautiful clear stock, what do you do with it?
Well, when I do it.
Are you use it for gravy?
You know what I like to do, especially, I mean, for Thanksgiving here in Hawaii, all of my family lives on the mainland now, so it's we get a lot of friends together, and we always eat outside. So the turkey stock that we're going to use it with our stuffing, except we don't use bread in our stuffing. We use something called ulu, which is breadfruit, but we'll use the turkey stock there.
Nice.
We always start with our meal with a nice, clear bone broth. And that kind of gets the palate going. Uh-huh. It opens everything up. Everybody starts getting social. I use. I just start with a nice, clear, beautiful stock. And it's just eluded me for years. But I'm going to try your method.
Oh, my goodness.
There's one final, like, sort of the coup de grace.
Are you going to tell the consomme it?
The consomme, yeah. So this is the fancy French way.
This is overboard, but please go on.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, sort of the abbreviated version of this. So in French cuisine, a consomme is absolutely crystal clear.
Right.
And so in culinary school, like we have to take a test on whether we can make a clear consomme. So basically what you do is you create a raft. And so what we would use, we would basically save our kitchen scraps. So all of the trimmings from potatoes and carrots and onions, any leaves, and save all of those. And then you mix those with egg whites and ground meat.
Lean meat,
very lean meat.
Yeah.
And then you basically create a giant patty, and you put that on the top of your liquid that has all your bones.
Okay.
You bring that to a rapid boil, and you poke a hole in the center of this raft. And so what ends up happening, it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen a coffee percolator.
Sure.
But basically, you're percolating the broth through this raft, which is your filter.
Okay.
And what ends up happening is the water bubbles up through the very center of the raft and then kind of cascades over the top.
And the egg whites, all the bits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
The egg whites and all of the little remnants not only provide flavor, but they also catch all the particles, and the egg whites bind with all the little particles. And so you just let that go for a while, and then you have a perfectly clear broth or consomme, and then you have to carefully remove the raft and then, you know, strain your consomme. And you have to be very careful at that stage, because if you, you know, jostle your raft too much, you'll dislodge some of those particles. But that is the French technique for making an absolute crystal clear consomme.
I was laughing when Rick was like starting with this. I'm like, you are going really overboard here. But I love your tradition and your idea of starting the night with a little bit of the bone broth. So clear, so like clean of flavor. I love that it's like going to be turkey. So it's like, oh, here's like a really pure, clean turkey flavor for you to start the night, get you excited. And I do think a consomme for that would be gorgeous, because
I dream about it every year. I mean, I am so focused on getting this. it's been challenging, but I really appreciate your recommendations, and I've written everything down. The egg white is very interesting. I've never heard that before, so I'm going to try that. We might be having
consommé. It's kind of a fun process.
It is. It's kind of cool. The way I was taught it a little bit differently, where you actually mix it in and you bring it up, heat up very slowly, and then the whole thing, as it heats up, it starts to float to the top, and as it floats to the top, it also catches everything. But the idea is, like Rick said, you're creating a filter in the pot.
Yeah.
And then you carefully scoop all that stuff out, and then you have the beautiful clear broth underneath.
Okay. All right.
Good luck, Danielle. That's such a beautiful
birthday,
little starter.
My birthday is Thanksgiving, so we have a lot to celebrate.
Happy birthday.
Awesome.
Yeah. I know everybody's eating for my birthday. It's great. It's a great time of year.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday.
Amazing.
Happy
Thank
Thanksgiving.
You.
Aloha.
Thank
Talk
you so
later.
Much.
So, all right. We have Julie from California. Hey, Julie. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, thank you so much, Francis. It's so exciting to be on your show. And Rick, thank you for taking my call and my question about how to cook a wild turkey. I live in a vineyard here at Rest Ridge in Lower Charles Valley of Napa Valley wine country. And we often see, about 8 different turkeys roaming together, and they're feasting on a petite Syrah. Typically, and they've gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and I can't wait to cook one. We're going to have about 12 people, so I really want to know the best way to prepare this wild turkey, or these wild turkeys.
Wow,
that sounds amazing. I'm so curious what the flavor is going to be like. I'm sure it's going to be really amazing, actually. I think the thing about wild turkeys is... I think the flavor is insanely delicious, but they do tend to be a little bit leaner.
Mm-hmm.
Yours may be a little bit different because they seem to be eating very well. they will look very different than what most people are used to seeing on their Thanksgiving table. And so, like, I've made wild turkeys, and they literally don't have the large breasts that, like, a butterball is going to have.
Like, those are bred
That's a very manufactured, that's an American manufactured style of bird that doesn't exist in real life. Well, I mean, in nature, it does. But so that's the first thing. And then, as you said, the meat is darker because they're allowed to roam free. And so as they run around, they are... because they're exercising, more blood and more hemoglobin is going into their muscles, which makes it darker, makes it more flavorful. But the downside of a bird that is training and exercising is that it is, in fact, a little bit tougher, and sometimes very tough.
Yeah.
So, my recommendation to you, if you're, I would say your larger birds, which are going to be older, you may want to consider doing a braise of some kind really soften them up. Whereas your smaller birds, which might be probably younger, are going to be more tender. And if you just roasted them in a traditional way, they'll be great. But I have found, like, when I've roasted a large bird, it's almost inedibly tough, or at least, depending on how much exercise they're getting.
Yeah, I can tell you, Rick, these birds get a lot of exercise. They're roaming all over the vineyards. Then they will go through the garden area. And then if they're disturbed, they will hop over the fence into the neighbor's vineyard.
Yeah.
I think that what I would do is, I would just like play up the fact that they're in the vineyard and they're probably eating all of those delicious grapes.
God, braise them in
and
wine.
And if you braise them, if you braise them in wine, you can even add some grapes to the braise. Some shallots, thyme, rosemary, whatever woody herbs you have, develop some of those tannic flavors. And what I would do is I would break down the turkey if you take off the legs, the wings, the thigh, and then split the breast, and then just lay that into either a large roasting pan or baking sheet. Pour in maybe half a bottle of wine, or just you need enough wine or liquid to come up about, maybe like a quarter of the way up the bird. You don't want to boil it.
Right.
and then just let it braise. You can brown it first and then braise it. That'll give you some nice added depth. Throw in some wild mushrooms. I don't know what else you have growing on the vineyard, but you know, since it's eating the things that are in the vineyard, if you roast it with whatever's growing in the vineyard, you're going to have really, really beautiful complementary flavors.
Wow. Wow. No, that sounds like a great suggestion. And one thing when you're living at a winery, there's never too little wine at hand.
Yeah. Wine's unlimited.
That's amazing.
So but that does bring me to my next question. What would you pair it with? Now, would you pair it with Petite Sirah? We do have a vintage here at Rustridge that is lower in alcohol and would be a little bit lighter.
I mean, again, I would kind of go back to what is it that they're eating and then what are you braising it with? I mean, me personally, like, I love a good Viognier with Thanksgiving. I love that fruitiness. To me, that kind of just, it pairs so well with all the things that I want to eat. But I also like the idea of, you know, if these turkeys are grazing on a particular varietal, then I would play up that varietal. I would put it in the braise and I would serve it with dinner.
Yeah.
Great advice.
Well, thanks so much for the call, Julie. I hope you enjoy it.
I will have to send you a note and let you know.
Yeah, please do.
Please do. I'm so excited to try this.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you. And same to you both.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. So, Rick, you had mentioned earlier making salsas with cranberries. And with nuts, but talking to Julie and thinking about all those grapes, like I want you like on the spot, make up a salsa using grapes. That sounds like that would be such a cool, delicious combination.
Oh my God. Yes. I think what I would do is I would probably do a quick pickle. So I would probably slice them up, with either some serranos or some habaneros, some shallots, a little bit of sugar, salt, maybe an apple cider. Actually, no, I probably use a wine vinegar since we're in a vineyard.
Sure.
So maybe a Zinfandel or champagne vinegar. Actually, I really love champagne vinegar. And then throw in some fresh herbs. I really love, you know, just playing off of the sweet and the spicy and the tangy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like grapes, especially when they're pickled, there's just that pop of flavor. It's like it hits you all at once. So you get the pop of the vinegar, you get the pop of the sweetness. And then if you add a spicy element to it, like a very fruity habanero, you'll get like the fruit and the heat at the same time. And then putting that onto, you know, a slice of roasted wild turkey. Ooh. That just sounds incredible.
Yeah. Come on, baby. Oh, let's do that. All right. Let's go to our next caller. We have Dee from Seattle. Hey, Dee. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hi. Happy Tea Day to you, too.
Happy Thanksgiving.
What's going on? How can we help you?
Well, years ago, I worked in a restaurant, and we had a... sandwich that we made, brought by a cook who was from Chile, called a chicken churrasco. So part of the prep for that was to use a rolling pin and beat down chicken breasts until they were quite flat. And then we would grill those, serve them on a homemade bun with guacamole or spicy cream cheese. Anyway, they were delicious. Ooh. And I'm wondering if I could treat a boneless turkey breast the same way, by beating it down or tenderizing it and then stuffing it with something and rolling it up and cooking it.
100%.
Absolutely.
Yes. That actually sounds super good.
I would love some suggestions on what to stuff it with.
Oh, man. Well, what are you into?
100%.
Well, I love cranberries. I love celery. I love sweet bread, butter. And how would I cook it? Would I stuff it and roll it up and tie it and bake it in the oven, or would I brown it on both sides first and then bake it, finish it off in the oven?
Well, I've written a recipe for Food Network for a turkey roulade, which is basically the two turkey breasts that have been butterflied and then thinly sliced so that they're basically one large contiguous flattened piece of meat.
Right.
I didn't pound it. I basically just asked the butcher, like, take the turkey off the bone and then just give me a 1-inch thick piece of breast with the skin intact.
Okay.
Because I wanted to basically fill it and roll it, but I wanted the skin on the outside as protection, but also because it looks pretty when it's nice and golden on the outside.
Exactly.
And so for that one, I basically just put an entire Thanksgiving meal inside the turkey. So there were, I mean, literally, like, it was, I made a small amount of you know, like a sourdough stuffing, green beans with mushrooms. Mm. I instead of sweet potatoes, I did butternut squash. Mm-hmm. And then I put some cranberries in there as well.
Ooh, any pecan?
And then just rolled it up. I didn't put pecans, but that you could totally put nuts in there as well. Some toasted pecans in there, or you could swap out the butternut squash for sweet potato.
Right.
And the thing that you for that because it was so dense. I mean, we're talking like this was. Oh, God, probably about, I would say, between 10 to 12 inches around.
Right, okay. It's like a roast almost.
This is one of those situations. Yeah, no, it's 100% a roast.
Right.
And so you tie it up like a roast. Mm-hmm. You put it on a rack inside of a sheet tray.
Okay.
And then you basically slowly roast it in the oven. And it's going to roast for about... you know, probably about 3.5 to 4 hours.
Okay.
And I think what's critical in this situation is you do need a probe thermometer because the inside has to reach 150 degrees.
Right.
And it's actually really easy. Like if you have a probe thermometer, especially if it has an alarm to it, you just set the alarm 150 and then you go away. And then like it beeps when it's ready. Yeah, they're pretty inexpensive.
A new toy.
They're like $19 on Amazon, $10, $12. But yeah, so it beeps, you pull it out, you tent it, you let it sit for an hour. The temperature will continue to climb.
Right.
It'll go up another 20 degrees as it sits. And then you slice into it and you basically have like Thanksgiving meal in a jelly roll. Like, you know,
wonderful.
And it's really like there are no juices that come out because all of the turkey juices are absorbed by all of the stuffing.
Fillings,
and
yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah, and it's like incredibly moist. It's really beautiful and golden brown. You can make a gravy to go with it, but you can have fun with it and just, you know, stuff it with really literally whatever you want in whatever amount you want. The critical thing is the temperature. The interior temperature, like the very, very center of your roulade needs to come up to 150.
Okay.
But as long as you do that, you know, you can put fruits, vegetables, nuts, bread, rice, whatever.
Right. I have a recipe for a pecan stuffing that has cranberries in it, which is really delicious.
Ooh, that's,
so I'm thinking
that's
maybe that would be the thing to do. And what temperature, at what temperature would you bake it?
I'm going to check because I pulled up this recipe. So I just want to tell you exactly what I did. It was 325.
Okay. 325
degrees.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. You need to check the skin after about the second hour, just to make sure that it's not browning too quickly. So then just cover it with a piece of foil and it'll prevent it from getting too brown.
Right.
Yeah. Like if you're baking a pie and the crust is getting too dark, you know, sometimes they say put foil on top of the pie.
Well,
yeah.
that sounds absolutely lovely.
And spray your rack with cooking spray.
Okay.
That'll prevent it from sticking to the rack.
Okay. I think I'm going to try it.
Right on, Dee. This is a real project.
I'm so excited for you. It's really, really good. And I've had different versions of it. Like I had a friend that her family was Italian and they made sort of an Italian kind of porchetta version of it. So it wasn't like super stuffed, but on the inside they had like fennel pollen and rosemary and lots of garlic.
Yeah.
And it was ridiculously delicious.
Well, I'm sorry. I took two dinners that day.
I feel like your Thanksgiving difficulty level keeps going up, Dee. I appreciate your appetite for challenge.
Oh, I love cooking. It's fun.
Right on. Well, enjoy it, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
I will. Thank you so much.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, so turkey jelly roll. What an idea.
Who doesn't love a turkey?
Who doesn't love a turkey jelly roll? Rick Martinez is the author of Mi Cocina, Recipes and Rapture from My Kitchen in Mexico. Hang tight, we'll be back with more with him and your questions. And then Chef Manit Chauhan is waiting in the wings. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I'm Francis Lam, and this is our annual Thanksgiving Day show, Turkey Confidential from American Public Media. Happy Thanksgiving! I'm Francis Lam, and you're listening to The Splendid Table's Turkey Confidential from American Public Media.
Turkey Confidential is supported by Old Salt Merchants, dedicated to sustainably sourcing bold and unique salts, sugars, teas, and spices from around the globe. OldSaltMerchants.com/holidays, helping to make your table splendid this holiday season. So here's our show today. It's a lot like it usually is on this day. It's you, it's me, it's fantastic guests, and it's your cooking questions. The thing that is a little different this year is that we weren't able to take your calls live today, but we're happy to talk with so many of you over the last couple weeks, and we're going to get back to it with YouTube, podcast, and cookbook star Rick Martinez.
Anne from Indiana is on. Hey, Anne, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
How are you? What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a big fan of The West Wing, and there's a pretty famous Thanksgiving episode okay. where Martin Sheen's character calls the Butterball hotline and asks a question about cooking stuffing. And in that episode, he describes his stuffing. That's not what he's asking the hotline about, but his stuffing includes oysters, which I'd never heard of before. Like, I'm a Jersey girl. I put Italian sausage in my stuffing. So, like,
I'm with you.
Yeah. Yes. So, yum. Like, oh my God, oysters yum. And stuffing sounds really good, but also really intimidating. Like, obviously, you don't want to undercook shellfish, but it would be really easy to overcook it. And then you would want to actually be able to taste the oyster. So I don't know how you would, like, what would you pair it with to, you know, make, like, round out the flavor without covering up the oysters?
These are great questions.
You know, they're actually more aggressively flavorful than you would imagine. Like, my grandmother used to make a cornbread oyster dressing. Mm-hmm. And she used a lot of aggressive flavors like onion and garlic and jalapenos and then, you know, homemade cornbread. And the oysters really stood up to that. I've also had, you know, sourdough stuffing made with oysters. And I think that, you know, that's a really good way to go as well. I think, you know, it depends on, you know, what kind of flavors you're into. Like, if you wanted to do something like very, very traditional, you know, thyme, a little bit of rosemary, garlic, shallots, celery, and then, you know, toasted bread cubes. And then, you know, I would go to your fishmonger or fish market and ask for already shucked oysters in their liquor. I would certainly never, ever want to shuck a bunch of oysters the day before Thanksgiving to
dozens
prep.
Dozens and dozens.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah. And then you want to use both the liquor and the oysters. And you could actually throw them on the grill for a second just to get a char mark if you wanted to go kind of that direction. And then, like, throw in a little bit of smoked bacon. And then you've got, like, a smoky oyster dressing. Yum. Or you could actually just put them in raw if you feel comfortable with that. I mean, they're going to cook in the stuffing, right?
Yeah,
if you cook the stuffing for about an hour, and I typically do mine at like 375, 425 degrees for an hour until it's bubbling, they're going to cook. So
yeah,
I wouldn't worry about that.
Rubbery if you do that?
No, and it's a great question. I think with oyster stuffing, oysters are not quite like clams. They don't typically get as rubbery. When they're fully cooked through, they will have like a... Some people love this and some people, you know, it's not really their cup of tea or whatever. But they have a little bit of a... they get... I'm trying to find an attractive word for it and not like pasty. Pasty
right,
is not the most attractive word. But they cook up in such a way where it's not like clams. When you overcook clams, they are like chewing rubber bands.
It's like a rubber band, yeah.
But oysters are not exactly that way. It's
almost like a hard cooked egg yolk. But I think it takes a long time. Like I love deep fried oysters, and you know, like they're in 350 degree oil for like 5 minutes, and those are still you know, really, really tender, and they kind of almost pop. Like I find that you might have a little bit of that kind of pastiness on the outer edge of the oyster. But the interior is always still like so full of flavor and moisture. Mm-hmm. They kind of pop in your mouth, which is what I really like.
I love deep fried oysters, so I could totally go
that's
for
good.
That
yeah.
texture. That sounds absolutely delicious.
Yeah, and I think Rick is totally key. Yeah. When you get them, make sure you get like good oysters pre-shucked in their liquor, because that liquor, that liquid is great flavor, amazing flavor, and you would use that like basically in place of stock, right? If you're making a stuffing,
stock,
typically you add stock to like moisten the bread or whatever before you bake it. And so you use that instead. Maybe if it's not quite enough liquid, then you can add a little bit of stock to supplement, but like have that be your main flavor carrier.
And I would also use like either clam juice or fish stock instead of supplement, like chicken. Yeah. If you needed more liquid, just to kind of play up that flavor as well. If you find a recipe that you like, obviously use that, but you could adapt like a just as a good stuffing recipe and add the oysters in.
Yeah.
The only thing that you'll have to do is reduce the liquid a little bit because the oysters are going to release juices as they cook. Uh-huh. And so I would probably like, so if you found a recipe and it said use 2 cups of stock, I would probably go down to 1.5 cups. But I think that's the only thing that you would have to do to adjust the recipe to accommodate the oysters.
Okay, cool. You've made this sound much less intimidating.
Oh no, it's going to be amazing. And I would, you know, if you love fried oysters, I would play around with those flavors. Like whatever you like to serve those oysters with, play around with those flavors.
Oh, that's fun.
But, you know, also oysters, like I said, I mean, they go well with bacon, they go well with chorizo, you know, like there are a lot of different other cured meats that you can pair with or other aggressive flavors and you'll still taste the oyster.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome.
I think I'm going to go with bacon. I think I'm sold on the bacon.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God. Me too. Yes.
And I love an old school stuffing with lots of celery and onion would be so good with that.
And then use your bacon fat to cook all those vegetables. Yeah. Oh, I'm getting so hungry.
Oh, yes. Okay. This sounds really, really good.
Well, all right. Well, thanks for the call, Anne. Yay. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, Rick, this has been a blast. Thank you so much.
I am so hungry right now. I need to go eat.
I'm like dying for some oyster stuffing now. Well, all right, man.
And a turkey roulade.
Yeah, a turkey roulade al pastor. There you go.
There we go. Oh, yum.
Well, Rick, happy Thanksgiving to you. It's been so fun.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
I hope you have a great celebration.
I will. Eat well, my friend.
I will. You too, brother.
Bye.
Rick Martinez is the host of Sweet Heat and Pueblo on YouTube and is the best-selling author of the cookbook Mi Cocina, Recipes and Rapture from My Kitchen in Mexico. Turkey Confidential is supported by Old Salt Merchants, dedicated to sustainably sourcing bold and unique salts, sugars, teas, and spices from around the globe. OldSaltMerchants.com/holidays, helping to make your table splendid this holiday season. The first time we had Manit Chauhan on our show was a few years ago. We did an interview with her about running her restaurant. It's called Chauhan Ale and Masala House. It's a place in Nashville where she combines Indian flavors with the food of the American South. And when we got to talking about what she puts on her menu for Thanksgiving, and I mean like things like turkey tikka masala and biryani stuffing and chestnut naan, I just knew that one day we had to have her back on to take your Thanksgiving calls, especially since she is ridiculously well-versed in improv cooking as a judge on the show Chopped. Hey, Chef, happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
Hello, happy Thanksgiving to you too. I am doing fantastic.
Oh, it's so nice to see you. What are you doing for Thanksgiving this year?
So Thanksgiving every year is, it's one of my favorite holidays because of
really?
Course it revolves around food, right? So I usually take all the regular Thanksgiving fixins and go ahead and put my own twist to it. So think of tandoori turkey, think of morel biryani stuffing, tikka masala gravy, coconut poriel green beans. I mean, you name it. And it is, I think there's no editing when it comes to our Thanksgiving table. And that's exactly what happens.
That's so awesome. But hey, all that sounds incredible. But how did you get so into American Thanksgiving? I mean, I know your restaurants are open and those are really busy days in your restaurants and that's super, but how did you get into celebrating yourself this way?
So to me, I think it really boils down to the first Thanksgiving that I was here in America. I came here in 98, 99 to go to the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, Thanksgiving, everybody went home. And I, you know, home was India. So I couldn't go back home because it was, you know, it takes so long to travel.
Sure, sure, sure.
So one of the faculty members called me over to their place. You know, there were 4 or 5 of our students who hadn't gone back home. And that was my first exposure to Thanksgiving. I was like, oh, this is incredible. It was family getting together. It's everybody pulling each other's leg and amazing food. And it's like, it's a day dedicated to eating and family. And I just fell in love. So yeah, it's been a love affair since that time.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. I love that you could carry that forth. So before that, though, like when you were growing up, you grew up in Punjab, right? In Punjab, India?
In India, actually in Eastern India. I was born in Punjab, but grew up in Eastern India in a small town called Ranchi.
Oh, okay. Were there like harvest celebrations there that you would have growing up?
Oh, yes. I mean, in India, the funny part is like there's literally a festival or a celebration almost once a week. It's something or the other. And yes, it does revolve around food, which makes it so incredible. So to me, I think that's the one thing which has always resonated when it comes to food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love that, like, your first Thanksgiving here in the States was a Friendsgiving. And I,
yes, it was. It was just, I felt so welcomed. It was just amazing.
That's fabulous. Well, all right. Well, let's get to our callers. We have a whole bunch lined up. And let's go to Annabelle. Hey, Annabelle.
Hi.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Hello.
Hi, Annabelle.
I'm doing splendidly.
Right on. Where are you calling from?
I'm at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem.
Oh, right.
So fighting pickles.
They're really the fighting pickles?
We are really the fighting pickles, yes.
That is the most incredible team name I've ever heard in my entire life.
Love that.
Well, right on. Well, what can we help you with?
Okay, yeah. So as a vegan in my dorm kitchen and college budget phase of my culinary career, what would you suggest as a good turkey placement that is not a suspiciously real and expansive fake turkey, or just a vegetable that's trying for its life to be meat? I just want a main that's as delicious and satisfying as turkey without harming the planet.
Right on. Man,
Annabelle,
that's
an amazing question.
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting to me. I feel very blessed, you know, knowing Indian cuisine, because it really doesn't need to be meat forward, and it is mostly vegan. That's how we eat at home. And I personally do not like meat replacements because they are such beautiful vegetables, you know, out in the world, that why do we make a substitute? I would go with a hearty vegetable like a mushroom. A mushroom with a hard sear gets that meaty quality. It's also not very expensive. Right? And then you can go ahead and replicate all of these beautiful Thanksgiving fixins. Like, you know, make a cranberry chutney with maybe a little bit of fennel and orange in it. You don't need any dairy or any meats in it. For the gravy, you can make a beautiful gravy with almond milk, which is delicious. The stuffing can be, you can get some bread or use some lentils or some rice.
Yeah.
It really doesn't need to be meat forward.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay.
And I mean, that is such a thing. It's like, oh, when you want a meatiness, like you go for mushrooms, and actually, you know, you can't argue against it because it's fabulous. But you said you're in school and you're going to be cooking Thanksgiving in your dorm?
I'm going to be at my house, but in the future, when I'm on my own and like further from home, that's kind of
good. Yeah. Well, right on. Well, okay. So I'm thinking, this is funny because this is totally not how I normally cook, but hey, it's Thanksgiving. It's a celebration. Maybe you like live a little. I was thinking something a little bit like slightly chefier, slightly more elaborate.
Yeah.
And you can do this with expensive ingredients or non-expensive ingredients. But I was thinking like, why don't you make a really nice cashew puree?
Ooh,
and you do that by soaking cashews in water. There's a trillion recipes, you know, online, but you basically soak cashews in water overnight and then you throw them in a blender and they puree up this really silky, beautiful thing. And it's not going to be like, I wouldn't use it like mashed potatoes, but there's like a creamy, silky quality to it that's somewhere between a sauce and like a puree, right? So like very simply, I would do that maybe with just salt and maybe a little touch of sugar in there, maybe a little touch of honey to give it a little bit of balance. And then I would like maybe like put the amount of that or spread that on a plate. And like Manit said, like roast some mushrooms.
Okay.
salt, pepper, olive oil, in bite-sized chunks or whole, whatever, but like roast them in like a 450 oven until they're like really brown. I mean, you can totally certainly do that with like portobello mushrooms, which have a nice sort of juicy texture. And they roast up well. They will be a little bit on the moist side. So like, and you know, that's cool. Like that's just kind of how they are. If you can find them, king oyster mushrooms are so delicious. And I think they'd be really good for this because you can like sear them in a pan, get them nice and brown, and then roast them or just roast them in the oven until they're nice and brown. But they get so sweet and caramelly when they brown, and their texture is very chewy, like in a really satisfying, bouncy way. And I just imagine like big chunks of those on this cashew puree, and then do like a simple like Italian style salsa verde. So like chop up some, mince up some garlic, chop a bunch of parsley, maybe some capers, some lemon juice and olive oil. You're basically making a vinaigrette, but with like a whole ton of chopped herbs, chopped parsley. And then kind of like, you know, just kind of swirl that all on top. And I think between the creaminess of the cashew puree and the chewy meatiness of the mushrooms and that nice, bright, lemony, herby salsa, like that would be such a delicious like main.
Yeah, that sounds dope. That sounds really good.
And if you make it, feel free to invite us. It sounds delicious.
Right on. Well, happy Thanksgiving, Annabelle. Go fighting pickles.
Yes. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, talk to you later. I mean, I can't believe that there is a school team called the Fighting Pickles.
That's... I'm just thinking of the t-shirt that they would be wearing. I love that.
Right on. So tell me about your mushroom biryani stuffing. How do you do that?
Yes.
That sounds so good.
So I use morel mushrooms, but I also try to get some, you know, whatever wild mushrooms I can find. That just adds to the texture. So with morel mushrooms, especially around Thanksgiving, most of the morel that I get is dried. So I rehydrate that, and that is my stock in which I'm going to be cooking the rice. Then I make a masala base. So with biryanis are usually layered. So my masala base is yogurt, ginger, garlic, mint, cilantro, deep fried onions, you know, ghee sauteed cashew nuts and raisins. And then I put like garam masala, fenugreek, turmeric salt, make this paste and mix the mushrooms along with it and saute it for around, you know, around 10 minutes or so. That's the base. My mouth is watering while I'm talking to you.
This is so wild.
I love it so much. And then the rice, I cook it in a whole garam masala, which is bay leaf, cinnamon, cloves, cardamom, and salt. And then I cook it till it is around 90% done. So to me, I always tell people that it's almost like rice is al dente. That's the time you remove it from water and layer it on top of the, you know, the mushroom saute. Then I put some ghee, some saffron milk, again, deep fried onions, mint, cilantro. Put the cover on top of that container. It needs to be airtight. Okay. And then I seal it with some dough.
Okay.
And then into the oven it goes. It's around 300 degrees for 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
So the liquid from the yogurt, from the saffron milk, all of these, they just mix together and make for the most flavorful bite ever. And again, this is the same way if you're making goat biryani, chicken biryani, vegetable biryani, just replace the mushrooms along with whatever the protein or the vegetables is, and it just is as delicious.
Oh God, I wouldn't even look at the turkey if that was on the table.
Unless it's a tandoori turkey. I also restaurant.
Fair.
For the restaurant over here, because we can't, there's so many people. It's one of our busiest days. Instead of doing an entire turkey, I do turkey breast roulade. So I fill it with a malai, which is a cashew, a pistachio filling. We roll it, make roulades out of it, and then deep fry it in a pakora batter.
Oh, come on.
So good.
Oh.
Have I inspired you to come and visit me for Thanksgiving yet?
That's bonkers. Oh, man. Okay. Let's Let's go to our next caller. This is Joshua. Hey, Joshua. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much for your help.
Yeah, what can I do for you?
My question is, I'm a big butternut squash fan, and I wanted to see if y'all had any favorite butternut squash recipes that we could try out. And I'm thinking of a non-roasting option because I think the oven will be occupied. So any stovetop or pressure cooker options that we could give a go.
Yeah, sure. Mania, I'm sure you have a ton. Let me start with a very simple one, and I'll turn it to you. I totally hear you on not having oven space. I think that is like low-key one of the number one problems that like Thanksgiving cooks face that we don't talk about enough because everything is baked and you have a giant turkey that's taking up the entire oven on its own. So I totally feel you on not having the oven. I think it's very smart to like think about, okay, what can we do on the stovetop? I'm going to do you one better and tell you, you can go ahead and microwave your squash.
Perfect.
It's super fast. I would peel it, chunk it, put it in a bowl, maybe with a tiny splash of water. I would also season with a little salt and then cover it. Try 5 minutes and then try, you know, a few minutes more. Just keep doing it until it's cooked and it'll be super fast. And then from there, okay, you can go 1,000 different directions. If you want to do a mash, lately I've been really into like a sweet potato mash. I think this would work so nicely with butternut squash, with ginger and coconut milk. So a little butter or oil, some minced ginger to get that flavor kind of going a little bit.
Oh, that sounds great.
And then add your squash to that, mix it up, mash it, and then have some warm coconut milk on a little pot on the side, and just start pouring in that warm coconut milk and mix until it's the right texture. Season it with salt, maybe a touch of sugar, maybe a little squeeze of lemon or a tiny dash of vinegar, and I think that'd be super yummy. Oh, and some chilies would be great in there. But that's a super simple idea I have. And let me turn you to Manit.
That sounds delicious, Francis. Hi, Joshua. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hi. Thank you.
Okay, so butternut squash is one of my favorite ingredients. And I can give you hundreds of recipes, but two really simple ones. One would be, you mentioned the pressure cooker. So just take the butternut squash, cut it into small pieces, put it in the pressure cooker along with some white onions, ginger, garlic. If you can find curry leaves, curry leaves gives it a beautiful depth of flavor, or you can also get lime leaves, right? Some chili, and then go ahead and put a little bit of vegetable stock or skim milk and cook it. And then you can go ahead and blend it with some coconut, get one of those chili crisp oils, which are so delicious, put it all over that, and you can make a delicious soup out of it.
Oh, that sounds
the second good. Idea Great. Is cut it into small cubes and roast it on the stovetop. So in butter, roast it till it starts caramelizing. And then you can actually make this in advance because you can make a salad out of it. So get some kale, cut some kale into really thin julienne. You don't even have to cook it. You can get a balsamic vinaigrette because that's sweet and tart. That combination is amazing. So toss that with some almonds or walnuts, and then finish it with some pomegranate. So it will even visually look like Thanksgiving with that gorgeous orange and green and those bursts of pomegranate and almonds on top of it. So that you can make in advance and it can be served cold.
That sounds great.
I love all these. Thank you so much.
Yeah, have
You're
fun,
welcome.
Joshua. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Cheers.
Cheers. All right. Hey, Edward's here. Let's go to Edward. Hey, happy Thanksgiving, Edward.
Oh, well, happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Hi, Edward. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, back at you. Thanks.
How can we help you?
So I'm going to be in Paris for Thanksgiving and Nouveau Beaujolais holiday. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to make chicken Provençal, but I'm wondering what's something else good that I can shop for at the local market and make my friend Carol happy.
Oh, boy. Man, I'm going to say this. I mean, if I were to be in Paris for Thanksgiving and celebrating in the rental, not at a restaurant, cooking, you're already making this beautiful chicken dish with beautiful French chicken. Just shop for the rest. You know what I mean? Like, one of the beauties of French cuisine is, you know, all the incredible just makers, right? Go get some amazing cheese. Go to, like, the fromagerie and tell them to pick three fabulous cheeses for you. Then just get some really nice charcuterie and start with your great charcuterie. You can start with the cheese or you end with cheese, you know, in the French style.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and get butter. There is a butter in France called Bordier, B-O-R-D-I-E-R, and it is honestly one of the most delicious things I've ever tasted in my entire life. Bordier butter, I don't understand why it's that good. I truly do not. But it just absolutely blows my mind. So get a hunk of Bordier butter and get a baguette. Get wine. Get some beautiful produce. Make a salad. Buy a fruit tart. So literally, I'm telling you, buy the entire meal. Mani, what would you do?
Yeah, Carol's bringing foie gras.
That's amazing. I actually will have to agree with Francis. I mean, I think it is so incredible. I was going to say that the only thing that you should add to that is probably champagne and some incredible French desserts. Oh, that's like the OG.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and what I would suggest is instead of getting, you know, just one dessert, get all of these small petite desserts and they'll be so delicious. I mean, just like a buffet. So start off with, you know, the charcuterie or an antipasti, you know, or maybe even a salad would be incredible. And just, yeah, some good champagne. I mean, you're in Paris. Good champagne.
Yeah.
Now, which dish would I have champagne with?
All night long, buddy.
You start off with champagne, you continue drinking champagne.
When are you going to get tired of it? You tell me when you're going to get tired of it.
Exactly.
Well, I definitely want to have the Nouveau Beaujolais with the chicken.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So with champagne with everything else.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Francis, I think we should invite ourselves to Paris for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, when do you want to go?
That sounds delicious.
When do you want to go? Let's go have a picnic. Let's go to Paris and just have a picnic for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, that is part of the plan is I'm going to cook more food than Carol and I will eat. So the rest of it is picnic food.
Perfect.
That sounds so amazing.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Well, have a blast.
I sure will, and thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a great trip. Travel safely.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye.
Well, Manit, this was so fun. Thanks for dropping by.
That was so fun. I mean, happy Thanksgiving. And I'm trying my level best to convince you to come to Nashville for one of the Thanksgivings.
So you can taste all
of these dishes.
It really, I mean, we've talked about this a few times now, and it just, every time, it just gets wilder and wilder. Pakora, turkey roulade, come on, stop it.
So good.
Okay, Manit, well, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
All right, take care of yourself.
Bye.
Bye. Manit Chauhan is chef owner of Chauhan Ale and Masala House in Nashville. She's a judge on Chopped on the Food Network, and she's the author of Chaat, Recipes from the Kitchens, Markets, and Railways of India. Turkey Confidential is supported by Old Salt Merchants, dedicated to sustainably sourcing bold and unique salts, sugars, teas, and spices from around the globe. OldSaltMerchants.com/holidays, helping to make your table splendid this holiday season. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. It has been a blast talking with all of you. From our family to yours today, happy Thanksgiving. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is Turkey Confidential from American Public Media. Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. In every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking an amazing meal. Listen as Ina does what she does best, make good conversation and delicious food, while making it sound fun and easy. This season, Ina dives into conversation with astronaut and colonel Nicole Mann. As Ina teaches Nicole how to make seared scallops with celery root puree, they talk about everything from family to what foods Nicole really craves when she's in space. and listen in as Ina and Pulitzer Prize-winning writer David Remnick talk about music lessons and the value of developing language skills before joining their spouses for a lively conversation over a comforting dish of chicken parmesan. If you love a good chat over a great meal, you'll love Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Our show is supported by Hero Bread. You know, for a lot of us, bread has been a staple all our lives. Toast at breakfast, sandwiches at lunch, a nice buttered roll at dinner. It's comforting and delicious, and bread is often what we crave. But sometimes, it can sit a little heavy after a meal. That's where Hero Bread comes in. They've created fluffy, delicious versions of the breads that we're used to, but that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories. Oh, and there's more good stuff too, like protein and fiber. Hero Bread has everything from your daily sandwich loaf to tortillas or hot dog and hamburger buns. The products are flavorful and they have something for every craving, from a dressed-up breakfast burrito to a late-night PB&J. They even have monthly small-batch drops of indulgent treats like 2-gram net-carb Hero Croissant or the 1-gram net-carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code TABLE at checkout. That's table at hero.co. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is Turkey Confidential, the Splendid Table's Thanksgiving Day broadcast brought to you by American Public Media. Turkey Confidential is supported by OldSaltMerchants.com. Be salty, be sweet, be spicy. Happy Thanksgiving! If you have joined us for this show before, you know that this is the day where we drop what we're doing to help you with your Thanksgiving cooking questions. I've got help, as always, from fantastic guests. And while we couldn't actually gather our whole production team into a tiny live radio studio today, we did get to talk to you over the past few weeks. So thanks for listening today, and please, we want to see what's going on in your kitchens and on your dining tables. Tag us on Instagram at Splendid Table or use the hashtag Turkey Confidential. A little later in the hour, we're going to bring on our dear friend Jesse Sparks. He's the host of our sister podcast, The One Recipe. But we're going to start right now with the pies and the cakes. Yes, the queen of the dessert people is here, Claire Saffitz, a video host for New York Times Cooking, star of her own smash YouTube show, Dessert Person, and the author of the new book, What's for Dessert. Claire is here for the most important course of dinner tonight. Hey, Claire, happy Thanksgiving. It's so great to see you.
Hi, it's great to see you too. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Welcome back to the world, coming out of your cookbook writing cave.
Yes, it is good to be out in the world again and cooking savory food
for
time in like 4 years. So yes, it's great.
I did see a photo of your fridge recently there where you're like 9 puddings down, only like 35 to go. So
yeah, I made 30 quarts of pudding. Actually, so far, I have to make 30. I've made 26 so far. I have 4 more to go for this bake sale event. But actually, pudding was a great call because it's actually pretty easy. And I have like a lot of pudding in my book and it's just stovetop. And I haven't had my oven on for the last 72 hours. But yeah, I mean, I'm always making some kind of sweet. So that's to be expected.
Right on. You can still enjoy like scarf weather. It's not like, you know, oh my God, it's 450 degrees in my apartment.
I mean, it's pretty much 450 degrees in my apartment all year round, no matter what. But yes, it's nice to have the oven off for a while.
Right on. And feel like, you know, it's time for Thanksgiving. It's chilly. It's cool. This is interesting to me because you told me that Thanksgiving is still one of your favorite times of year, which like I laugh all the time about how people who have ever spent time in food magazines like we have, like Thanksgiving is the ultimate chore. Right, because every year you have to pretend like there's a new way to do Thanksgiving, but there is no new way to do Thanksgiving. Everyone wants the same way, and we have to like it's like this Sisyphean push the boulder up the hill. Let's pretend to be creative while not upsetting anyone. But you actually liked doing that?
Oh, every year I got excited about it. I worked at Bon Appetit for 5 years in the test kitchen, and every year I got so excited, and I was kind of the only one for all the reasons you laid out. And I don't really know why. I love Thanksgiving. It is the big game. Like if you're a cook, it is your version of the big game, which I know we can't say, but it is the cooking Olympics. Like it is the biggest day of the year for people who are cooks. And so I just always got excited about it. And I never felt the need to to like totally reinvent the wheel or say like, here's the new Thanksgiving, here's mm-hmm. the Thanksgiving you should be making, you know, this year. Yeah. I just always love to sort of riff on the classics. So it is my favorite holiday. I love the coziness of it and the togetherness of it. And I really do get excited for it every single year working at a food magazine or just as a cook, you know, for my family. So I love talking about it. I love answering people's questions about cooking and Thanksgiving specifically. So this is really, I couldn't be more excited about this, basically.
Well, that is perfect. It's always great to have guests on this show, but it's really great to have willing guests on this show. It's like, really, are you sure we got to do this?
No, I am here of my own volition and very excited.
Right on. Okay, well, let's start then. Let's start with Jen. Hey, Jen.
Hi there.
Happy Thanksgiving. Where are you calling from?
Thanks. I am calling from the North Shore of Minnesota near a small town called Grand Marais.
Right on. Well, what's going on? How can we help you this year?
Well, we have some diet changes in our family. We have some gluten sensitivities and actually somebody who has celiac, so I guess the ultimate gluten sensitivity. And one of the mainstays at our table has been the sage stuffing. So I am looking for some help on how we can either recreate or do something just new, which would just be a really tasty gluten-free stuffing option. And I'm hoping you can help.
All right. Before we start, I have to ask you maybe a close personal question. Like, what is the role of the sage stuffing? Is it like the thing like everyone every year comes and says, oh my God, the sage stuffing is going to be on the table? Or is it like, no, we really like it. We bring it every year, but it doesn't have to be exactly the same. Like, are you, if we come with a totally new stuffing, is someone going to be like bummed out?
That's a great question. I think it's going to be a mixed bag at our table.
Okay.
There's some of us for whom that flavor is one of those, you know, once a year childhood memories. Like, we just grew up with it. Mm-hmm. It was the same stuffing every year. But I would say we're also, you know, can be a little adventurous. And so it would be open to some new ideas. Maybe if there's like a way to bring some of that sage essence into an option, but you know, if there's something mm-hmm. else too, we would love to have ideas because it's, the stuffing has to be there. So.
Okay. And really quick, how do you normally make it? And then I'm going to let Claire go nuts on you.
Sure. It's not too complicated. It's generally, you know, a whole lot of really good, either like a baguette or, you know, like just a great white bread, lots mm-hmm. of dried sage. And then we saute a ton of finely chopped celery and onions in butter. And it all gets tossed together. Historically, we put some of it in the bird and some of it just in pans. And we've kind of gone away from stuffing in the bird. Mm-hmm. But by and large, it's a pretty small host of ingredients. But the result has always just been that thing that you want to have for days after, too, for leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess one question would be like having an idea for something super tasty that also will last a few days because you have to have leftovers.
Yeah. It's part of the deal. What do you think, Claire?
Okay, I think, well, I want to say, Jen, I completely affirm your stance that like the flavors of stuffing, the sage plus the onion plus the butter plus the celery, like those are, I think, the defining flavors of Thanksgiving. And so they should be present on the table somewhere, whether it's in your a very like traditional stuffing or something a little less traditional. So as far as I see it, to do a gluten-free stuffing, I think you have three options. I think you could simply source a good quality gluten-free white bread from a bakery or a store. And you know, if you have friends who are gluten-free or whoever's making the stuffing or bringing it, sort of like ask around word of mouth of a good source for a gluten-free bread.
Smart, yeah.
Or I think you could go the route where you're sort of going, rather than substituting gluten-free bread, you're just looking for something that's more naturally gluten-free. So I had two alternative thoughts. One would be a cornbread stuffing made with just 100% cornmeal cornbread. Yeah. So no added flour. So a sort of more traditional Southern style cornbread. And those tend to be a little dry and crumbly. I mean, sort of intentionally. And so it might require you know, more liquid than you're used to adding. And you might want to give, if you, you know, cube up the cornbread, you might want to give it like a nice toast beforehand to sort of help it hold its shape, because it can be a little bit crumbly. I mean, all cornbread stuffing sort of can be. So, or if you don't want to use 100% cornmeal, you could make like a cornbread and substitute, rather than all-purpose flour, you could do a gluten-free flour blend. Mm-hmm. So that's one option. And then I think the third option is like a wild rice stuffing or a rice-based stuffing in general, which is definitely going to feel really different from a bread-based stuffing. And it's not going to sort of have that binding that you get. But it's still really lovely and delicious. So I think you, in all of those options, you could still have the flavors of the sage and the onion and the celery, and just apply like a different base. So those are sort of my thoughts. I don't know, Francis, if you have particular feelings about cornbread stuffing versus rice versus bread.
I mean, I honestly, I love it all. So I'm not like, I'm like, oh, that sounds good. Ooh, that sounds good too. How about rice? Sure. And then like my head is going to like, oh my God, what if you had like, Jen, I don't know if this is kind of getting to that sort of, let's reinvent Thanksgiving. Oh no, everyone's upset. Sort of problem. But in my head, as Claire was talking, I was like, oh my God, like a fried rice with sage and butter and onion and celery as like the main flavorings sounds so good to me, but I can totally understand if people are like, that's not what we used to have. Why is the future strange? But that sounds amazing, especially if you use like a short grain rice, so it's chewy and delicious, like almost like a sushi rice kind of vibe. So it sticks and packs a little bit more. That sounds super good. But yeah, you are in Minnesota. Like wild rice would be amazing. Or maybe like, would you, I don't know, Claire, would you think of like, if the cornbread stuffing would maybe be a little bit too crumbly, would you like add wild rice to that so you have like the texture and the sort of the sweet nuttiness of wild rice to mix with the cornbread in the stuffing?
That's an interesting idea. I think you definitely could. I mean, I would, you know, wild rice takes forever to cook. And in the, you know, I would make it the first couple times I ever made it, I would undercook it. So I would really make sure that you cook it really thoroughly. And then you could certainly add it in. I think most importantly, if you're going to go the cornbread route, I would add eggs to the stuffing. I think there's kind of two camps when it comes to Thanksgiving stuffing. There's the added eggs and there's the no added eggs. And I like the eggs because, especially if you're going gluten-free, you don't have the gluten that acts as a binding for everything to kind of make it hold together. So I think adding some eggs to your stock when you're sort of moistening everything and adding the liquid is going to be really important if you're doing cornbread, just to sort of give you a little bit of that, like, that cohered kind of effect when you go to serve yourself, so it doesn't just kind of crumble apart. And then I just feel like a wild rice stuffing is a little bit more just like a grain salad in a way, I guess. Like, it doesn't have that kind of bound texture. But either way, I think the flavors would be amazing. And Francis, to your point about like a fried rice version, to really kind of like do something a little more creative and outside the box on Thanksgiving, I feel like the real work of making stuffing is all of the chopping and sauteing. So if you make like a large amount of that sage, celery, onion base, you could do two different things. You could cook some wild rice, you could do a cornbread, you could just divide it. And the most of the work is just in all the chopping and cooking in this skillet. So I don't know. I this is maybe like giving you a window into my Thanksgiving approach, which is like I'm always trying to actually do too much. So I maybe shouldn't encourage people to be making two different stuffings. But yeah, I think some good possibilities, and you would get really different effects, but still with those same kind of base flavors.
Right on. Jim, what do you think?
Well, they sound amazing. And actually, my grandfather grew wild rice for years, and so that feels very aligned with, you know, kind of the things that we like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And I love the idea of the cornbread.
Terrific.
I thank you so much. And Turkey Confidential has been my kitchen companion for years. And I appreciate being able to ask the question and figure out some solutions.
Well, thanks for listening and thanks for calling this year.
Good luck.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. All right, right on. Let's go to Autumn. Hey, Autumn. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hi. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Where are you calling from?
I am from Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh, right on. Right on.
Yeah.
Wait, Huntsville is there like a Kia or a Hyundai plant there?
Yes.
Or is that where NASA is? Or maybe both?
Well, both, actually, yeah.
Well, welcome to the show, and thank you for everything that Huntsville gives to the world.
Well, of course. Yeah, we get to drive by a giant rocket every day going to work, so it's a fun place to live.
And I do think because of the Kia or Hyundai plant, I forget which one it is, there's like amazing Korean food there.
You know, there are a few really great places here. You're right.
Cool. Anyway, we're here to talk about Thanksgiving. I'm opining on the town you live in. But how can we help you this year?
Well, so I know that the traditional dessert of Thanksgiving is pie. You know, pumpkin pie, pecan pie, apple pie, mm-hmm. all the pies. But this year, I'd like to change it up a little bit and have another option on the dessert table. So I'm wondering if you have ideas for a festive dessert that isn't pie related.
Claire, you seem to be a natural.
Well, I mean, Frances, I'm actually very curious to hear what your thoughts are. But I absolutely have many thoughts. Don't My be. Brain was like firing in many different directions with this question. Autumn, so I'm happy to chat about Thanksgiving desserts that are not pie. So just as a question, though, is part of the desire to avoid making pie dough, is that part of it, I wonder? Because I do sort of realize that that's something that people can struggle with and can add a lot of stress to the Thanksgiving process.
You know, I have never successfully made a pie dough, so it could be a part of it, yes.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I mean, that I understand. Like, pie is... Okay, well, if you permit me just to back up just for a moment.
Are you going to push pie on her?
If you may. No, not at all. I just want to say, I am a huge pie lover, but I do think that pie is very tricky, especially pies that we have on Thanksgiving traditionally, like pumpkin mm-hmm. and pecan that require par baking. These are very actually complex techniques to do really well. And for people who are not regular pie makers, to do that one time a year and have it be Thanksgiving and to have the dessert play this major role, I think is a lot of pressure and is in some way setting people up for dissatisfaction or, you know, unsatisfactory results. So mm-hmm. I totally understand this. And I, even as a pie lover, I completely support non-pie Thanksgiving desserts. So my thought initially went to pumpkin cheesecake, which I feel like is kind of the obvious answer and the obvious pie alternative. However, I don't totally recommend that because I think it's a little heavy for Thanksgiving. I mean, not that pie is light, but it's
the
certainly not.
Refreshing pumpkin pie I normally have.
Right. None of the traditional Thanksgiving desserts are exactly light. But I do think doing non-pie opens you up to serving something a little bit lighter and brighter and more refreshing, which is really nice. So I would opt for something fruit-based. So one thing that I love making every year is I make a cranberry curd tart. Ooh, cranberry yeah. curd is, it's so delicious. It's so kind of piercing, but also like has the richness that you want. And it's pretty easy to put together. It's just all made on the stovetop. So you could do something like a cranberry curd parfait where you layer it with ginger snap cookies and whipped cream, and then it's sort of like a, you know, individual dessert. Yeah. I think that would be really nice.
Claire, when you talk cranberry curd, which I assume you kind of make like lemon curd, can you walk us through it super quick?
Yeah, absolutely. It is basically like making lemon curd, except you are cooking down whole cranberries. I love cooking down cranberries because they make this really satisfying pop. When the mixture kind of comes up to a boil, they pop and burst. And you can add a little bit of lemon or lime juice to that to increase mm-hmm. the acidity because curd requires a certain amount of acidity for the eggs to set. So you get this kind of thick, almost pudding-like, but, you know, custardy mixture. Mm-hmm. And then it's cooked like a basic custard on the stovetop. So you have your egg yolks. You whisk that in a bowl with some sugar. You stream in the hot mixture, the hot lemon juice and cranberry mixture, put that back in the saucepan and just stir it until it's thick. And then very often you like whisk in butter at the end to kind of enrich it and thicken it further. Mm-hmm. It's so, so delicious. And my family loves that, the cranberry curd tart. So that's a huge favorite. The other thought that I had, which I think it would be really, really great on Thanksgiving, is something in the realm of like a sticky toffee pudding or gingerbread. Again, sticky toffee pudding, not exactly light. But I think combining that with something like poached pears,
no one's ever,
you know,
turned it down.
Right. It is kind of an irresistible dessert. It has like that toffee sauce on top. But to combine that with poached pears or like sauteed apples or that kind of thing to add a fruit component, I think would be really lovely. And I would highly recommend, there's a famous recipe by the pastry chef Claudia Fleming that she made at Gramercy Tavern, the restaurant in New York where she was the pastry chef for many years. It's a ginger, I believe it's called like a ginger stout cake or something like that. It's made in a bundt pan. It is basically like a gingerbread. It is so unbelievably good. And that would be such an appropriate, you know, like just beautiful Thanksgiving dessert. So those are sort of my thoughts. I'm curious, Autumn, if any of those strike a chord or Frances, what you would recommend.
Yeah. I mean, they both sound delicious to me. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want my advice on this because on this very show several years ago, someone came and was like, oh my goodness, my pumpkin pie is underbaked. And I was like, throw it in a blender. Like literally that was my advice to them. So like you, no one needs to hear from me on this.
Pumpkin pie milkshake also sounds delicious.
I mean, that's what I said, but like it was not the classiest response I could have ever given anyone.
Maybe I'll just have nothing but desserts on the table and just skip the dinner.
I mean,
no one would be mad.
No one would be mad.
You know, Autumn, other ideas if your family loves like an apple dessert and you're looking for something that's sort of pie adjacent but not pie, I think a really simple apple crisp is so lovely and so easy and, you know, the perfect thing to serve with vanilla ice cream on the table or whipped cream. So my family, like, it's the whipped cream for Thanksgiving dessert is like a big thing. We always make like a huge amount of it because everyone wants seconds and thirds of the whipped cream at least. And we add a little vanilla to it, but we don't usually sweeten it because there's like plenty of sweetness on the table. And I also had written down as a note to your question, Autumn, tarte tatin, which is probably a little too close to pie, just given the pastry. But I just love like those caramelized apples. So you could even make it simpler than crisp and just do like caramelized apples served with, you know, some store-bought cookies and a little ice cream and really, really keep it simple. So there's so many options beyond pie.
Yeah, well, that's a great idea, too. I love that.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, Autumn, and thanks for the call.
Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too, as well.
I wish you a blissful, pie-less Thanksgiving.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Claire, I got to tell you, when you were talking about that ginger stout cake, I'm not like a huge... Well, maybe that's not true. Like, ginger cakes. Mm-hmm. To me, when I think of ginger, I think of, like, fresh ginger, the flavor of fresh ginger. And then when we have, like, ginger cakes, like, ginger desserts, they're usually more like a dried ginger, like a muskier kind of flavor. Mm-hmm. And I don't think of that with lemon, even though I know people pair the two together. But, like, because you're talking about curd and then you're talking about a cake, I'm just thinking of, like, oh, my God, like a ginger cake with lemon curd sounds so good all of a sudden.
It sounds so good. When I was my one restaurant job right after culinary school, we would do lemon curd infused with fresh ginger. And it was so good. So I could definitely see sort of tying those flavors together in that way. It would be so delicious. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
That and your giant family bowl of whipped cream, just in case it gets a little too tart. Like, okay, let's load it on.
Totally. That sounds so good.
All right, let's go to our next caller. And this is Brianna. Hey, Brianna. Did I pronounce
Hello.
It right?
It's Brianna, but I'm not picky usually.
Okay. Well, happy Thanksgiving, Brianna. And what's going on? How can we help you?
So my in-laws are phenomenal, and they host us for Thanksgiving every year. But I make this joke every year that it's a competition to see who can bring the creamiest, brownest Thanksgiving dish. And my biggest complaint is... Where's the tart? Where's the crunch? Where's the, you know, where's the texture? So I would love some ideas for something that I can bring, maybe like a gorgeous crispy salad, or it doesn't even have to be salad, but something that's not like cream of cream on cream with more cream and also put gravy on top.
I mean, if there is a day for it, it is Thanksgiving, but I totally hear you. And that is... like we had Samin Nosrat on this show actually a few times, and every year her big Thanksgiving, you know, the song that she sings is why we need acid on the Thanksgiving table.
Yes, absolutely.
She meant lemon or vinegar. So like one thing is, I think what you're saying, a great salad and make sure it's crunchy and crispy and like great vinaigrette. But Claire, what do you think? I actually, the first thing that came to mind is actually a recipe of yours, but I want you to go first.
Oh, interesting. Well, Brianna, I 100% hear you, and I completely agree. I do think you need something raw on the table, and usually in the form of a salad. And so these other kinds of side dishes are a chance to add, of course, acidity, but also crunch, Brianna, to your point, and also a little bit of bitterness, which is not sort of a flavor that's on the table, sort of an opportunity to balance out the whole meal. So I really like doing a chicory-based salad, so doing... Mm. Maybe it's like some torn radicchio or frisée, which like is, you know, such a lovely texture. Often I'll do like a super thin shaved fennel that I add to it because I want that additional crunch. I toss in like some toasted hazelnuts again for crunch. And then I'll just do like a really basic mustardy shallot vinaigrette, lots of acid, maybe like sherry vinegar or red wine vinegar. Just a tiny squeeze of honey to balance it out, because I do think like a bitter chicory, like a radicchio, needs a little bit of sweetness so that it's not overpowering. But having a dish like that on the table is so important. It's sort of like a palate cleanser a little bit because your palate can get fatigued by like all of the high fat kind of things that are on the table. So I think, and it's also really beautiful because it adds color, like your point about like everything's kind of brown, you know, you want something kind of vibrant looking on the table as well. And so another thought my family does, we've never done like the traditional green bean casserole with the cream of mushroom soup and everything. But we will often do green beans, which by the way, green beans is such a weird, it's like, that's so not a seasonal thing for.
In what corner of the country are green beans in season at the end of November?
I have no idea.
And the answer is like
none.
Maybe
I guess.
Hawaii,
right? Right.
The southern tip of Florida,
right? Not the most intuitive choice for a November meal, but we'll just do like a quick blanch on green beans, keep them kind of crisp, and then just saute them really quickly with some like shiitake mushrooms and like, you know, lots of lemon and salt and pepper. And sometimes I'll make like a crispy shallot topping just for, you know, additional texture. So that's a really nice kind of like lighter, brighter version of a green bean casserole where you're retaining the texture of the vegetable and you're getting, you know, you're adding some acid and there's a little bit of crunch. And then another thing we'll do is a shaved Brussels sprout salad. So keeping, if Brussels sprout, I mean, that's sort of a more appropriate like green vegetable on the table, but often they're roasted or they're sort of contributing to that sort of softer, like fattier, presence on the table. So keeping those raw, I think, is a really nice variation on that.
Just shaved them.
And we've done, there's like it's a Susan Spungen recipe, and I don't remember where it first published, but it's a delicious salad that has shaved Brussels sprouts and kale and dates. And I think there's parm on it and like a lemony, I think the vinaigrette is lemon. I can't exactly remember the details, but that's like a delicious salad that we'll eat every year. And it disappears. Like it's, I think, you notice what disappears off the Thanksgiving table first. And in this case, it's the salad. That's a great salad. So, I completely agree with you that like the meal really demands something crunchy, bright, acidic. So those are just some of my thoughts. I don't know, Francis, in your Thanksgiving tradition, do you have other salads?
I mean, you know, the first thing I thought of, Claire, was I think the first time you and I ever met was when you demoed for me a recipe you did for broiled green beans. It's super simple. The green beans are laid out on a sheet tray. In one layer, thrown under a super hot broiler for like just a couple minutes, just to get a little bit of char on them. So they're still kind of, they're not crunchy, they're cooked, but they have some of their texture still. And then you dressed it with, I think, like olive oil, like garlic sauteed in olive oil, with a big squeeze of lime and a shot of maple syrup to make sort of like a warm, garlicky lime maple syrup vinaigrette, and poured that on top. And it was so delicious. I've made it so many times since, and that sounds super great. Plus, really fast, and only spends a couple minutes in your oven. So it doesn't. That's the other thing with Thanksgiving, where like everything needs to go in the oven, everything comes out of the oven. So oven space is so important. You can make it early, you can dress it, let it marinate, or just dress it, before you serve, and it's great room temp.
Awesome. I haven't thought about that recipe in so long, Francis. I'm so glad you reminded me of that. I like feel like making that. That's a great thought.
Hi, I'm Claire Savitz. I have so many banger recipes, I just forget them. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, well, it's like what we were chatting about before. It's like I've only been baking and making dessert for so long. I was like, I have this whole like library of savory recipes. And it's like, oh, I should go back and look at some of those. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, for the next book. Right. All right, Brianna, it was great to talk with you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much, and same to you.
Clara Saffitz's new book is called What's for Dessert. We'll be back with more with her in a minute. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is our annual Thanksgiving Day show, Turkey Confidential from American Public Media. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I'm Francis Lamb, and you're listening to The Splendid Table's Turkey Confidential from American Public Media. Turkey Confidential is supported by Old Salt Merchants, dedicated to sustainably sourcing bold and unique salts, sugars, teas, and spices from around the globe. OldSaltMerchants.com/holidays, helping to make your table splendid this holiday season. We are, of course, spending this hour with you as we do every year on this day, helping you with your Thanksgiving cooking problems. Right now, we're in the middle of the good stuff. Dessert time with our friend Claire Saffitz. Let's get back to it with her. All right, let's go to Gabrielle in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Gabrielle, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, how are you? Thank you.
I'm so excited to be here with you. I love Portland, but how can we help you?
So I have been living in Portland for about 7 years now, and it's the first time my family from California is traveling up to spend the season with me. And
In
rather than staying in Portland, we're actually heading out to the coast, which is about an hour and a half away. And so with the road trip in mind, I was wondering if you have any recommendations for items that I can prep the week ahead and bring with us there. Also keeping in mind, like, any fresh catches. We are a pescatarian diet, so we don't do any kind of traditional turkey. But yeah, just like anything I can make ahead of time to make the vacation a little bit more easy.
Oh, that's awesome. Are you in Astoria?
Yeah, we'll actually be in Seaside, so just a little bit south.
Oh, it's so, oh God, that coast is so gorgeous.
I know, like, I'm really excited.
Sand and the cliffs and, oh, it's awesome.
Yeah,
well, right on. I love a pescatarian Thanksgiving. My wife is pescatarian, and plus in the Northwest, you have such incredible fish. It's still halibut season, I think, at least in Alaska, so not terribly far from you. And Claire, what would you tell her to do?
Well, hi, Gabrielle.
Hello.
Lovely to talk to you. Can I ask a couple questions first just to get a sense of a direction? Okay, so I did sort of write down some thoughts. So in your family, is there generally a desire for like the meal to be a little bit lighter given some of the vegetarians and pescatarians, or are you still sort of like, even though we're not having turkey, we still want all the cream and the butter and, you know, and those sort of richer ingredients?
Well, I would say in the last couple of years, we're definitely in this like gray area of how holiday seasons go, because my mom loves a traditional holiday, and my dad usually consumes meat, but because of just the division in diet, we've kind of switched to doing, like, we'll often do, like, a salmon for Thanksgiving or Christmas holidays. But my mom does really want that, like, festive traditional side, so like mashed potatoes are usually there on the table. We aren't like a green bean casserole family, but you know, that's always fun to throw in sometimes.
Got it. Okay, no, that's super helpful. Okay, so one of my thoughts was, rather than doing a traditional stuffing, would be to do like a savory bread pudding. So this is definitely going to be like a richer item on the table. But you could do it with vegetable stock rather than chicken stock. And I was thinking it could be something where you're adding like mushrooms and kale and Gruyere and sort of really bulking it out with a variety of vegetables as well. There's like a pretty well-known Thomas Keller recipe for a leek bread pudding, which is incredibly delicious. Just because the make-ahead ability of a bread pudding or a stuffing like that is so high. And I do think they tend to taste better as they sit. So that's something you could make the day before you leave. And then, you know, like you could, you know, you can transport it in the baking dish or the 13 by 9 pan, kind of stick it on the floor of the back seat of the car, you know, with some foil over it. And that's the best place, by the way, I've done so much of it. It's like, that's the best place to put any food if you're driving. Okay. It's on the floor of the back seat of the car. It doesn't slide around and it's not going to get on your seat. So that's so portable and so easy to reheat. And you can really kind of get all those traditional Thanksgiving flavors in there if you're adding sage or rosemary or thyme or any of that.
Yeah.
Another thought that I had is a soup of some kind. However,
okay.
Actually, my mom is like always trying to do a soup course on Thanksgiving, and I'm always vetoing it and being like, "Mom, no one wants soup on Thanksgiving."
So because you it's for like, someone else.
Well, I think in this case it might be appropriate because my point for my mom is like, yeah. if their real estate, stomach real estate is like scarce on Thanksgiving. Yeah. It's like you have to,
right.
something has to get cut. So I'm like, no one wants to take up space with soup. But I think in your case, it could be a really nice option because it sort of checks so many boxes, you know, for people's dietary restrictions. And you could do like a super, like a really robust fall soup, like a butternut squash. And you could do like, you know, fried sage leaves and toasted pumpkin seeds on top to add some texture or croutons. And, you know, so easy to make ahead and just reheat. So I think that could be a really nice option.
Yeah. No, I like that.
Yeah.
My dad's a big stew guy. Like he was always making stew whenever I was home in the fall.
That's perfect. I mean, if you want, like a butternut squash soup would be like a pureed, smooth, kind of velvety soup. But if you want something even a little heartier, like a mushroom and barley could be really nice. That to me like feels is so fall. Or even like I was going to say a French onion, but that's usually with beef stock, but you could do like a vegetable right. stock with that. So, and then I think also like to be able to make ahead stuff that's great for snacking. I think about something like like spinach artichoke dip where you could, I don't know if that's the kind of thing your family would be into, but you could just kind of like prepare it and reheat it and, you know, again, bring it in the baking dish. So that's, you know, another great option. Frances, given that your wife is pescatarian, do you have any other maybe like more like protein-based or main
sure,
courses?
Yeah. I mean, we love vegetables and everything you've said, you know, and she is, you know, she grew up at a time where no one cared. So it was just like turkey and like you get to eat the sides. And she like, okay, I'm just used to eating all the sides. But if we were to do like I'm just imagining if I am in, you know, Oregon, I'm going to the coast. I was thinking about the slow roast side of salmon, but you can totally slow roast halibut. Halibut is a little meatier and it is a little bit leaner than salmon. So you want to be a little bit more careful in the cooking, but like you can totally do it in like if you want to be really safe, like a 225, 250 oven, you know, season it well with salt and pepper, whatever kind of like aromatics, like, you know, throw a couple cloves of garlic and maybe some sliced onion, some herbs and olive oil, and just kind of like let it bake. We call it slow roast, so it sounds cool, but really you're just gently baking it until it's, you know, cooked through to your liking. And, you know, at 225, 250, like a nice big chunk of it, like it could take a while in the oven. So you like, it doesn't have to be stressful. You're like, oh, I get it in there and get it out and you have a nice window. I would cook it to like medium. So like 130-ish on a thermometer. And what I love about halibut is that like meatiness, that lightness. You don't want it like super flaking off, but like just enough for it to like sort of slide apart. And what I think goes so nicely with it, since it is a leaner fish, is you can do like a bunch of brown butter and throw some like really savory little pops in there, like capers and olives in the brown butter. And
yeah, that sounds so good.
You know, like
spray
a lemon on that and just some fresh herbs in there and just kind of douse it. And then that with your leek bread pudding and with a soup and with a bunch of salads and crisp vegetables, like that's a killer holiday.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And everything is so different than my family has done, like experimenting. I think it will be fun because we're like not in our own home. It's going to be like a totally different environment. So I think it would be fun to experiment with that.
Yeah. Well, have fun. Oh God. And go get a bunch of oysters.
I know. That's going to be my side
Northwest
project
oysters
for the weekend.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have fun, Gabrielle. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Have a good holiday season.
Yeah, you too. And Claire, this was such a blast. It was so great to do this with you. Thanks so much for coming.
My pleasure. I love talking about Thanksgiving. I love thinking about Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to talk about it anytime you want. Give me a call.
Right on. Thanks so much. Talk to you later.
All right.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Bye-bye.
Claire Saffitz is author of the New York Times best-selling cookbook, Dessert Person, and her latest one is called What's for Dessert. Turkey Confidential is supported by Old Salt Merchants, dedicated to sustainably sourcing bold and unique salts, sugars, teas, and spices from around the globe. OldSaltMerchants.com/holidays. Helping to make your table splendid this holiday season. Our next guest, Jesse Sparks, is, he's like my new work brother. All he wants to do is make a little bit of magic, and he is the host of our new sister podcast, The One Recipe, where he talks with great cooks about that one, back pocket thing they think everyone should be able to make. And since he's asked dozens of guests that question already, we figured we'd put him to the test and have him help answer your cooking questions today. Hey, Jesse, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, Francis, happy Thanksgiving to you, too. It's great to see you.
Right on. So you have spent so much of this year talking to people about their favorite, go-to back pocket recipes. Does your family have anything like that, specifically for holidays or for Thanksgiving?
Oh, my gosh. I wish it was, only one thing. I feel like this the Sparks-Watkins-Heller, which is, all of the branches of my family, we have a holiday recipe for every single one. So for instance, my mom, the second there is a golden leaf on the sidewalk, she's like, okay, we're mulling cider, we're mulling wine, we're making wassail, we're doing it all. So we typically have that leading up to it, but for the day, it's always about the sweet potato pie and the pecan pie. What about you? Do y'all have something?
I don't really. Our Thanksgivings are usually pretty weird. I'm out recording this show and I fly home that night, or, my folks don't live, within 1600 miles of us. My wife's folks don't live within 1500 miles of us. So usually we're either with someone, we're usually at the Friendsgiving, or usually my wife and our kid has been taken in by a neighbor, so it is very much in that sense. It's very much about community. It's about our chosen families who take us in for that day. But it's always really lovely. I think a couple of years ago, and this was one of my favorite Thanksgiving food memories, which may or may not say something about anything larger. But
we'll bring it out.
I flew home after recording the show live in the studio in Minnesota, flew back to New York, and hopped out of the cab to one of my OG favorite taco trucks, which is near the airport, and just ate three tacos on the street, and that was my Thanksgiving dinner because my wife and kid already had theirs.
And I bet those were probably the best three tacos that you'd had that
phenomenal
month.
Just phenomenal.
See, I love it.
November taco on the street when you can barely feel your toes, and the spice and the meat is just warming you up. It's great. And the smell of the hot tortillas coming out of the truck, it's great. Highly recommend it if you're in a situation where you need to eat by yourself on Thanksgiving. Highly recommend standing outside a taco truck.
Oh, my gosh. That just reminds me a lot of my family, too. We have moved so much as part of, my dad's jobs and just for random family events. So it's always just been about, okay, how can we get as big of a community together at our place as quickly as possible, or how do we pack up the kids and everything and drive 5 to 6 hours to get to Dallas so that we can have a Thanksgiving with my god grandparents? See, already chosen family happening. Yeah,
this is hardcore family.
Oh yeah, some people say it's a marathon, not a sprint, but I like to say it's a marathon, a sprint, and then you also have to swim at the end. So it's essentially just becoming a triathlon.
It's an Ironman triathlon. All right. Well, hopefully our listeners are not enduring an Ironman triathlon of cooking today. And we do have a caller. Let's go to Walter. Hey, Walter.
Hi, yeah, I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, Walter.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I love, yes, thank you. You too. I love improvising in the kitchen with smart options, especially when I'm forced to be creative. Do you have suggestions for the variety of wine and alcohol types I could use to flavor my gravy when deglazing my pan? For example, has anyone tried using tequila or bourbon in a pinch?
That sounds super great. Jesse, what do you think?
Ooh, I love this so much.
Okay, actually, let me start. hey, guest, what do you think? I'm going to talk first. I didn't mean that. But I do want to say one first thing as a safety precaution. I would say, Walter, tequila and bourbon sound great to me as deglazing your pan. I would do it off heat, or I would maybe start the deglazing with some stock or even just some water. And the reason is because you don't want that alcohol to burst into flame.
which it could do if you
splash bourbon into a hot pan, it can definitely burst into flame. But with that, Jesse, what do you think?
See, Francis is the conscientious friend. I'm the friend that's like, you know what? Go for it. You can do anything.
But I speak purely as someone who has literally singed my own eyebrows while doing that once. I was like, first, let's make sure the hair stays on your head and on your face and your house isn't burned down. And then with that, please continue with the culinary aspect of the show.
Okay, I would definitely recommend giving them a shot. I would just say, generally, keep in mind that, like, the darker spirits or alcohols are going to be playing really well with anything that is going to be, like, a darker meat or going to result in something that you want a darker flavor for. So if you're looking for a way to experiment, maybe start with the bourbon in smaller portions, see how you like it, and just really consider what taste you want the gravy to taste like. You know, so think about, okay, does this bourbon, like, how is this bourbon aged? Is it going to be, you know, something a little bit oakier? Are we looking for a little bit more of like a...
like caramelly flavor or...
Exactly. You know, just because sometimes some bourbons can end up tasting very, very like vanilla focused. So just give that a little bit of thought. But honestly, the world is your oyster. You know, try the tequila, try the bourbon, but definitely start with the water and keep your eyebrows.
Yeah. And have you ever used Madeira wine? I don't hear much about that.
Oh, Madeira is good. Madeira, port, even sherries. Like, I love, I mean, I don't drink personally, but I love the flavor of those fortified wines. Often they're sweet and they have a reputation for being sweet. Madeira is typically sweet. Port is I think almost always sweet. Sherry can be sweet or dry. And those wines have kind of like a, sometimes they have sort of like a, an old fashioned kind of reputation, like a not cool, not stylish reputation. But I actually think if you, those are beautiful, beautiful wine traditions, all three of them. And I think that if you get a nice one, it's not just about the sweetness. There's a really dark complexity that they get from being aged in many different barrels over time, which is certainly the sherry method. And I think port and Madeira too, but I could be wrong on that. But you have lots of different complexities of different woods, different ages of the woods, and lots of different wines actually being blended together to make those things. So that is, I mean, I would definitely look into that. I mean, I would get yourself a you know, don't break the bank, but get like a nice bottle of Madeira or port. Give them a taste. And if you like the taste, then, I mean, certainly you can deglaze with it. You can also add a little shot at the end. And the difference is you're going to taste much more of that wine or that liquor in its sort of like fresh form if you add it at the end versus if you deglaze it in the beginning. It'll just be, I mean, they'll both be delicious, but they'll just be different versions of that flavor. Yeah, Jesse, like, absolutely. Do you have like a beginning or end kind of vibe when you're adding stuff like that?
Yeah. So I love to both add a little bit at the beginning, but also a little bit at the end, just because if you're working with something that has a little bit more acidity to it, or if you're trying to maintain a certain texture also, sometimes the cooking kind of changes it a little bit, or it can like mellow out some of that acidity. So adding at the end also reintroduces some of that brightness, some of that kind of shine that sometimes gets mellowed out a little bit or rounded out and draws out some of that sweetness too. So,
yeah, terrific. I appreciate the answers. And just to make it clear, I would have adequately sampled the bottle before using it.
Quality control.
As you deserve. You are the cook. Today is your day.
Today is your day. That's right. Today is your day.
Today is your moment.
Right on.
No, I appreciate it.
Well, have a blast, Walter.
It was great talking with both of you. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, take care. Happy
Thanksgiving
to you.
Thanks for calling, Walter.
All right, both of you too. Great.
Have a good one.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, take care. All right, so thanks for that, Walter. And let's go to Christy. Hey, Christy, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, happy Christy. Thanksgiving. I'm calling because I am a youth director at a church, and we are having our first Friendsgiving this year at my house. And so I'm looking for some ideas for some modernized or amped up traditional foods to serve to these teenagers that they're going to be excited about.
Oh, this is a good one.
Okay. Well, what's kind of the vibe of the menu of your group? Is it, are they going to be expecting a pretty, you know, straight up traditional Thanksgiving menu, but you want to add some twist to it?
So we're going to have them each bring kind of their own favorite thing.
Cool.
And I'm going to make the turkey. And then after that, I wanted to just add a couple of things that maybe, you know, would be a little different, but something they're familiar with.
Oh, right on.
Oh, okay. I like this already. Do you mind if I hop in, Francis?
You're closer to a teenager than I am, so please do.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, since since that's Francis's opinion, Christy, I got you right here. All right, so I think if you're looking for ways to kind of have a lot of fun and introduce a lot of new flavors that people may not have had before, I think Rick Martinez, who you heard on the show earlier, he has a great recipe for this cranberry salsa matcha. It's just the right amount of heat, just the right amount of like acidity and sweetness and tartness. So that one's a perfect condiment. Think about it like an oil-based hot sauce, almost, that you can kind of just like spoon over, you know, the slices of turkey. If you wanted to mix it up and instead do like turkey tacos, and let people just kind of shred their own turkey or have it the traditional way, that's another great way to use it. And all it is just like toasting some dried chilies in like a neutral oil, you know, tossing in some sesame seeds, and then tossing in like a few nuts, and then your cranberries, and all of that goes into a food processor, and then you're in heaven.
Ooh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, that's super good. It's a super,
and
super good
And being in Texas, that's right up our alley.
Yeah, totally.
See, I was like, I feel like I recognize that accent a little bit. Texas souls right here.
Wait, Christy, where are you?
I'm just north of San Antonio.
Well, right on.
Yes.
Jesse here, the Houstonian.
Yes, awesome. I am. I'm right here with you in spirit and, you know, 4 to 5 hours in traffic.
Yeah.
You know, Christy, when you said teenagers, I feel almost bad thinking of this because it's just like so ridiculously stereotypical. But you were like a teenager's spin on like a traditional Thanksgiving. All I could think was like, what if you just skipped the mashed potatoes and did French fries?
Oh, yeah.
But then I thought French fries and gravy is so good.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, you may not want to be, I don't know if you have like a whole, you know, fryer set up, but I mean, that would be amazing if you did French fries.
Yeah.
I mean, because like, honestly, like a homemade French fry is, let's be honest, not the easiest thing to make in the world. It can be a mess, but it does feel special because it's like, hey, I'm going to make a mess for you. You know,
yeah.
I care enough about you. But also, so much of Thanksgiving is baked, soft, you know, mashed. You know, there's not a lot of crisp crunch. And usually I talk about like, oh, have lots of salad on your Thanksgiving table or lots of vegetables that are kind of like still fresh and crunchy, because I think that helps brighten up that meal. But I also think French fries.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Absolutely.
I can't believe. I'm so sorry. I can't believe you called and I said, why don't you make French fries for a whole bunch of people? just, I mean, where my head
it's
went.
Guaranteed you're going to be the coolest.
You will be the coolest, yeah. Absolutely. And you know what? Leftover French fries with turkey, like potato, turkey, enchiladas the next day would be killer.
Or poutine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
See, honestly, you should pull up a chair and grab a mic and just hang out with us. Yeah. I think the three of us will have a great time.
Right. And again, just to go back to Jesse's idea of the Rick Martinez recipe for cranberry salsa matcha is great. But also just like if you have a large group and you don't necessarily know everyone's taste, I think something like that is a really great idea, like an unusual condiment, dressing, something that people can use to zhuzh up their own meal, but not right. If people are looking for a very straight up, I want to recognize everything, they can have that. And then other people can go for that cool chili oil and that cool chili condiment or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it just gives the whole group options and how they want to experience it too.
Christy, how many people are going to be there?
We're expecting 18 to 20.
Wow. Oh, all right. So I love a traditional turkey, but I also wanted to see how you might feel about doing a bunch of dry brine, like chicken or turkey thighs, just so people can have their own little dish and it's a little bit easier on you to serve. That way it doesn't necessarily feel like you are the only person who has to carve the turkey and man the table and make sure everyone gets everything that they need. Like sometimes it's nice to say, okay, here's everything. I'm just going to lay it out. And that way you can make sure that you get to be present at your holiday gathering too.
That sounds great.
All right, Christy, it was great to talk with you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Same to you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I really can't believe it. Fry French fries with 20 people. I'm sorry, Christy. All right, let's go to Jocelyn. Hey, Jocelyn, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Jocelyn.
Hi, happy Thanksgiving to you.
How can we help you today?
So for Thanksgiving, my family and I, we actually eat early in the day. Uh-huh. And then we like to kind of graze throughout the day. But here's the problem. Turkey sometimes gets dry the more you reheat it.
Sure.
And so my question is, how many hours would you say I can leave my turkey out before I have to start wondering if my guests are going to get sick because they're eating turkey that's been left out?
You know, this is not the sexiest question, okay? Let's be honest. But I am so glad you asked it because this is a little bit of an obsession of mine.
Okay.
To me, the most delicious parts of turkey are always like that little bit you just like nudged off, you know, the carcass while you were walking by that third time. You know, it's like that little juicy corner of like dark meat that didn't get taken off with the leg, you know, like that stuff is yum. However, this is also an opportunity for me to give you good advice because the last caller, I was like, you should fry French fries for 20 people.
Oh.
So I'm really not on my A game today, but today I can give you facts.
Okay, I'm ready. Hit me with the facts.
The facts are every health department in the country will tell you that turkey cannot be served anymore after 4 hours.
Four, okay.
That is the health department's guide. Okay. So the reality is people break that rule all the time, but that is the official guidance.
Okay.
It's 4 hours.
Well, my family, like, we really do. We start at 11, and, I mean, I don't know what happens. Maybe the tryptophan just kind of, like, activates, and everyone falls asleep. And then around 1:32, we're kind of like, you know, it would be real, real good. Also, a little bit of turkey with, you know, some sweet potatoes and, you know, some greens. And, you know, and, like, it's like, that's a great idea. While you go in there, will you grab me a cornbread and a little bit of turkey? You know, and so it really does turn into this whole day thing. And I'm just kind of like, I'm hosting for the first time this year. And I'm like, oh, I just don't want anyone to get sick. So I'm so thankful that you were able to answer that question. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure thing. We'll enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Happy Thanksgiving
Thank
to
you.
You.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Jesse, I'm glad you see my passion for the subject.
Oh, it's awesome. I'm loving it.
All right, Jesse, this was a blast. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving, Francis. Thanks for having me.
Jesse Sparks is host of the podcast, The One Recipe, and he is also a senior editor at Eater. Well, that is our show for today. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. I hope you and yours are celebrating each other and all the little and big things that matter to you. And to steal a line from Jesse, go make some magic today. From all of us at the Splendid Table, have a happy Thanksgiving. This year's Turkey Confidential was supported by Old Salt Merchants, dedicated to sustainably sourcing bold and unique salts, sugars, teas, and spices from around the globe. OldSaltMerchants.com/holidays, helping to make your table splendid this holiday season. I'm Francis Lamb, and this has been Turkey Confidential from American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.